When South Carolina announced its secession from the Union in December 1860, nobody took it seriously. But I was given a vision early in 1861 at Parkville, Michigan, that threw a different light on events.
No one in this house has even dreamed of the trouble that's coming. I've just been shown in vision that a number of states are going to join South Carolina in this secession, and a terrible war will be the result.
Oh, no!
Will there really be war with the South?
I heard the booming of the cannon and saw the dead and wounded falling on every side. I was then taken to hospitals and saw the sufferings of the sick and wounded prisoners. I was taken in the vision to the homes of those who had lost sons, brothers, or husbands in the war. There was distress and mourning all over the land. There are those in this house who will lose sons in that war.
On August 3rd, 1861, I had a vision at Roosevelt, New York, which explained what had happened 2 weeks earlier at the battle at Manassas, Virginia.
I do hope we get to Manassas Junction before the battle starts. Law, I'm that excited. Do you think we'll be in any danger, Albert?
Of course not, Agnes. Our boys will sweep those Johnny Rebs all the way back to Richmond.
I think all of Washington is driven out to watch the battle.
We better hurry or we'll miss it. I can hear gunfire already.
Well, I just hope they hold off long enough for us to eat our picnic lunch.
See there, Agnes, that line of men in gray uniforms of Beauregard's Southern Army. Our boys in blue are advancing!
Albert, the blue line stopped. They're turning back. It's a retreat!
The boys have routed. They're falling back. They're splashing through Bull Run.
The rebels are charging up the hill.
Let's get out of here.
The Northern Army was moving on with triumph. They rushed into battle and fought bravely. The dead and dying were on every side. The Southern men, in a little while, would have been driven back still further.
That's how it started, all right. It's a mystery why the Union soldiers retreated.
Just then, an angel descended and waved his hand backward. There was confusion in the ranks, and a precipitate retreat commenced.
An angel? But why?
It was explained to me that God had this nation in his own hand and would not suffer victories to be gained faster than he ordained. He will punish the South for the sin of slavery and the North for so long suffering its influence.
Believing that slavery would exist until Christ came again, Seventh-day Adventists strove to spread the gospel, to hasten the day of deliverance. In Battle Creek, the war seemed far away at first, but by the summer of 1862, a draft seemed unavoidable. Bearing arms against another human being was out of the question. Suddenly, the war was very close.
How can we keep our young men from the draft, Elder White?
Let me lay it out step by step. As you know, the government has set quotas of volunteers for each state.
Mm-hmm.
And the state has apportioned this quota to the counties, cities, and wards. If not enough men volunteer, there will be a draft.
Yes, we know that.
However, citizens' committees have been formed to promote enlistment by paying bounties to recruits. I think we should help raise the money for these bounties.
What a good idea.
But won't that interfere with systematic benevolence?
No, No, we mustn't take any money from Sister Betsy. That money is dedicated to sending the last merciful message to the world. Whatever we raise for bounties will be additional money.
Won't the community think our young men are cowards?
We must make it clear that Sabbath keepers refrain from volunteering, not because they're timid, but because our religious beliefs forbid taking human life.
At first, the war went against the North. But a partial victory at Antietam gave President Lincoln the chance to proclaim, in January 1863, the emancipation of slaves in all the rebel states. In March, Congress passed the expected draft law. It allowed conscientious objectors to be assigned to non-combatant duty or to avoid the draft by paying
$300. $300? That's more than a working man's wage for a whole year. And there are more calls for soldiers all the time. The church can't keep up with the demand. I'm afraid systematic benevolence will suffer now.
I'll write an editorial about it. People should make every effort to raise the money themselves before calling on the church. They should mortgage their property if necessary.
As I see it, the problem is getting the authorities to recognize our men as conscientious objectors. Even the Quakers are having some problem with that, and they're a long-established church.
And we don't even have a denominational organization, just a collection of state conferences. We need organization!
Organization has helped our cause, but the draft law was amended July 4th of this year of our Lord, 1864. We must act quickly to obtain official non-combatant status. I welcome suggestions. Yes, Brother Loughborough.
I move we send a representative to the Provost Marshal General. John Andrews would do a good job.
You'll notice, General Fry, that each document vouches for the loyalty of the Seventh-day Adventists. We're not reluctant to serve in the military so long as our religious beliefs in regard to the Fourth and Sixth Commandments are respected.
Mr. Andrews, I don't believe the exemption clause was meant for Quakers only. It applies to any religious group which holds non-combatant views. I'll issue orders to all deputy provost marshals to assign your draftees to appropriate duty.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
The fairgrounds in Battle Creek, next door to our home, had been turned into a training camp for recruits. In 1863, most of the young boys in town spent much of their free time there, including Henry and Edson.
Tramp, 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 tramp. The boys are marching. And halt!
That's a good drum we made, Henry.
Yeah, who'd have thought a cheese box could sound so good?
Let me join your army, please.
You're too little, Willie. You couldn't keep up.
I could, too. I could march just like a real soldier.
Come on, then. Tramp, 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 tramp. The boys are marching.
Ellen, I think we should get the boys away from Battle Creek. They're becoming more and more fascinated with war.
I agree, dear. They're losing the consecration they had at their baptism. I thought my heart would break when Henry wanted to join the army as a drummer boy.
Let's go to Maine for a while. We can stay with the Howlands at Topsom. And I can easily take the train from there down to Boston to work on the new prophetic charts the General Conference wants.
Adelia Patton will come with us, I know, to watch the children while you and I are visiting churches.
Good. We can leave about the middle of August.
On a chilly fall day, while we were away, Henry and Edson took a long walk by the river, and Henry came down with a bad cold. Meanwhile, in Brookfield, New York, James had a dream that made him think all was not well with the children. On Friday, November 27th, we returned to Topsom to find Henry dangerously ill. Tenderly, We cared for him.
How's Henry today, Ellen?
The cold seems to have gone down into his lungs, Sister Howland. None of the drugs the doctor prescribed is helping.
And we've all been praying that the Lord will heal him, as he healed Francis all those years ago in this very house.
He seems to be failing fast, Ellen.
Yes. He's very weak. I fear we'll lose our son. Oh, James. He's such a good, sweet boy.
Mother. Father. Where are you?
We're right here, son.
Please. Don't cry, Mother. If I die, promise me that you'll bury me in Battle Creek. Lay me beside my little brother, John Herbert.
Of course, dear boy, but why?
So we can come up together on the morning of the resurrection. Father.
I'm here, Henry, holding your hand.
You're losing your son. But don't mourn. I'll escape the draft, and I won't witness the 7 last plagues. Mother, I shall meet you in heaven on the morning of the resurrection, for I know you'll be there. Heaven is sweet.
We took Henry's body to Battle Creek, and with Uriah Smith presiding, we lowered the boy into the ground at Oak Hill Cemetery. I later wrote,
when our noble Henry died at the age of 16, when our sweet singer was born to the grave, and we no more heard his early song, ours was a lonely home. But God comforted us in the bright hope of meeting our children who had been torn from us by death in that world where sickness and death never come.